Civic Lex podcast, LexVote 2022 edition. My name is Jillian, and today I'm here to walk you all through the financial details of campaigning based on our second election workshop of 2022. This workshop was led by our Director of Programs, Megan Gulla. Thank you again, Megan, for all of your research. You are fantastic. Later on, we'll be joined by Courtney Daniel, who has experience with working in campaigns. Starting off, what does someone have to do to officially register for candidacy? A candidate must register with Kentucky Registry of Election Finance, or KREF, and they must file documents with the county clerk, the county's chief election officer. These documents include a letter of intent to run for office, explicitly stating their intention to run for office, and a document that proves the addition of a treasurer to a candidate's campaign. According to KREF, a candidate is any person who has done one of these things. They have received or spent funds to begin their campaign for public office. They have appointed a campaign treasurer, or they have given their consent for any other person to receive or spend their own funds with the purpose of bringing about their nomination to public office. However, a candidate must file the necessary documentation with KREF that I previously mentioned before spending or receiving campaign funds. If we have any listeners interested in running for local office in the future, be sure to contact the county clerk for more specific information on what you need to run and any other need-to-know information for candidates. We know that candidates accept contributions for their campaigns, but what kind of contributions can be made? Candidates can accept money through cash, check, draft, money order, credit card, or cashier's check. They can also accept non-monetary contributions such as goods and services, which are known as in-kind donations that are offered either for free or at a discount to candidates. Lastly, a candidate may accept loans. What are the different sources of contributions? Who can these funds come from? These funds can come from an individual, a minor, out-of-state contributors, and a few different groups as well. Firstly, a contributing organization, which is simply a group that contributes to candidates whose funds come only from within that group and not from outside fundraising. Secondly, a caucus campaign committee, which is a group that is allowed to receive outside funding to then use to either support or oppose a candidate. In the U.S., we can find Democratic and Republican caucus committees for each level or sector of government. Next, a permanent committee or political action committee, or PAC, that works year-round to support or oppose one or more candidates. And lastly, a candidate may receive contributions from a state or county executive committee. Here are the rules on that committee. This political party must be recognized on a federal level. The committee must get their party name on the ballot for at least one statewide candidate. The committee must have an official party structure, and they must assist with day-to-day operations of the party on a statewide basis. Now that you've heard all of the types of contributors, what are the financial limitations of these contributions? To start, individuals, permanent action committees, and contributing organizations can contribute at most $2,000 per election, per entity, right, per person, per organization. Candidates would not typically sway too much by the opinion of someone who has given that amount. It also depends on the candidate, but I want to reiterate that these individual donors usually don't have much say in the campaign they've contributed to. Minors can donate $100 max. Cash may never be received by a candidate as a gift. It must be a contribution. When cash is given as a monetary contribution, a candidate may not receive more than $100 per contributor per election. Each individual anonymous contributor may not donate more than $100 per election. The amount of anonymous contributions for a candidate may not exceed $2,000 in total per election. Caucus campaign committees and executive committees can contribute an unlimited amount. Also, an expenditure of $100 or less is not considered a contribution, even if an individual spends $100 for campaign materials or advertising for a candidate. People and corporations can make independent contributions, but corporations itself, including nonprofits, cannot make contributions. Here are some completely prohibited contributions. Charitable contributions, any contribution made by someone using a different name than their own, any contribution made by non-U.S. citizens or residents, but people with green cards may contribute. Contributions from another candidate and contributions made from a federal campaign account, except from a political action committee. I know that was really detailed, but there are many rules to regulate Kentucky campaigns. We've covered who can and cannot contribute and the limitations on them. Now, what kind of campaign spending is typically allowed? Campaign spending can go towards anything having to do with running a campaign or hosting campaign functions. These can range from staff salaries to beverages and snacks at a campaign function. As you can imagine, there is so much that candidates can use their contributions on. I would rather focus on what candidates cannot spend their contributions on, since these lists are very long. What spending is prohibited? The following items are completely prohibited for spending a candidate's contributions. So candidates may not use their campaign funds on tickets for events not related to their candidacy. They may not use their contributions on non-campaign equipment. They may not use it as contributions used to support or oppose someone running for any type of leadership position or any type of charitable donation to organizations that exist for the public good. Candidates may not use their campaign funds on fraud, of course, or any type of deceptive reasoning. They may not use it on expenditures on another candidate. They may not use it for dues to any organization. And lastly, they may not use it for trading money for any type of fraudulent voter activity like vote buying or vote rigging. How much do campaigns typically cost for mayor, council, and council at large races? These numbers really do vary, but based on our knowledge off of the 2018 election, they can get pretty pricey. For the 2018 mayoral election in Lexington, the cost ranged from about $200,000 to $400,000. Now Mayor Linda Gorton was on the low end of that spectrum at $262,000, and her opponent, Ronnie Bastin, spent a hefty $400,000 for his campaign. That same year, at-large campaigns ranged from $50,000 to $100,000. Vice Mayor Steve Kay's campaign cost at $51,000, and out-large member Richard Maloney's campaign cost $106,000. District council races have lower spending in comparison to the council-at-large and mayoral campaigns at $10,000 to $50,000. 5th District Council member Liz Sheehan's campaign cost about $12,000, and previous District 5 council member Bill Farmer's was $23,000. These elections typically stay in these spending ranges. It also makes sense to see that the higher the ranking in our local government, the more the campaign ends up costing candidates. As you can see, campaign financing is really not that complicated. It's just one of the highly detailed elements of running for public office. Remember, you can do your own research and use KRF to search by candidates or by race to see who individually donated to each campaign. In a few moments, we'll have a conversation with Courtney Daniel. She's had experience in working in campaigns as a staffer, and she'll give us a lot of insight about her own experience and the inner workings of campaigns in general so that we can contextualize the information that I just gave you. Campaign staffers have a pretty tough job. You can especially see that with all the regulations that we just went through for campaigns. Here's my interview with Courtney. Okay, so thank you so much for joining me, Courtney. Thank you. I appreciate you taking some time to talk about your experiences while working in campaigns. I know that you worked in the communication and press areas of campaigns before, so you weren't directly in charge of finances. But you, of course, were adjacent to it, as a lot of communications efforts are involved in messaging directly related to fundraising and affects the budget for a campaign. So it's great to have you here today. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, on campaigns, it's always about, unfortunately, the money you bring in the door allows you to do what you need to do. So a big portion of what we do in every department outside of fundraising is dedicated to supporting the fundraising.
Definitely. So you're just furthering that pot of funds in your role as well. Everybody kind of is.
Yeah. So I think when you look at the communications department specifically and how they support fundraising efforts, there are a few different avenues. There's internal things like call scripts. So when the candidate or volunteers are doing call time, they can they know what to say. They know where the candidate is on issues, about the candidate and their bio. There are materials that need to be created. There are things that called remittance envelopes that candidates and campaigns never have enough of. And those are little envelopes. So in campaign finance, you have to collect certain information about the donor. And so it's a little envelope that lets them fill out their name, their place of employment, their spouse's place of employment, and then a few other things. So when we go to do our reporting at the it's 30 days out, I think is the first one in the primary, you have all that information right there and your compliance person isn't struggling to get that done. So those are sort of some internal things that you prepare. And then there are other things that you do, like digital, email, and a website. When you want to make sure that it's easy to donate on your website. So when you log into a candidate page, you will almost always see that big red donate button in the top right corner. That gets a lot of space. And as far as an email program goes, we pull in all of our contacts and we make sure that our donors and supporters get regular updates, but we also make sure that they get lots of opportunities to sign up, to volunteer, and to donate. And digital ads, Facebook is a place where you can do a lot of targeting. There are a lot of other things you can do if you have the budget for that, but we want to make sure that we're reaching everybody, and social media is a prime area to reach voters and donors.
It definitely is, and thank you for explaining your role as well in that. It seems like definitely a lot of work and a very integral part of campaigning. I don't understand how campaigns got by without social media before the
age. Yeah, it's like the best of times and the worst of times.
Unfortunately,
for sure. Yeah.
Yes. That was just some general information and introduction from Courtney on the world of campaigning. But now she's going to go a little bit more in depth on the individual campaign staffer and volunteer experiences. She also provides an inside look on her general experiences with candidates. I know that election season can be stressful, to say the least. Can you talk about what the experience was personally like for you, if you feel comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, among staffers, you know, once you're in, you get addicted to the work. I would say it's really important for new staffers to figure out what that work-life balance looks like. It's definitely difficult because it's often a person you believe in or an issue that you believe in. So you will take it outside of the normal work hours. And often campaigns, particularly in Kentucky, especially at the state and local level, they don't have the budget that they need to build out a large staff. So you're often wearing multiple hats. Sometimes you may only have one paid staff person. Sometimes, you know, I've been on a staff of up to 100. So it's very different for sure. And in some cases, the smaller campaigns are harder on staffers because it's all on your shoulders. But it's fantastic. You get to work with people who are really passionate, who are really talented in state and out of state. You're connected to a network of people who work in campaigns nationally. And the candidates are excellent as well. It takes a lot to run for office and put your name out there and your family out there. And it's difficult. And I've worked with some candidates who are just excellent people. And once elected, I feel really want to do what is best for their constituents. And I know you often hear about, you know, the corruption and self-interestedness, but I was also a staffer for the General Assembly for a little while, and representatives on both sides of the aisle often had their constituents' best interests at heart.
Yeah, I'm sure working in a party with multiple people has its own difficulties, but you have that support group, and I know that, you know, just being one person wearing multiple hats, that sounds extremely stressful. But I want to know, you said you get a lot of support as well from the candidates that you've worked with. Do you work really closely with them? Is that how it typically is with staffers?
Yeah. They start calling you at 6 a.m. and they don't stop until midnight in some instances. You know all about them. You have access to their schedule. You know what they irritates them, what they think is funny. And what their heart and what they want to do. And so I think you see a candidate on TV and they're never perfect. But it's never the full story. And I think it is difficult when you know the person and you see the caricature of them on TV. It's hard.
You can only make assumptions, and it's easy to depersonalize somebody when you see them on the TV screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you work directly with them, and you know that's not true.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's interesting, too. Different candidates have different levels of experience being a candidate. And so you have to and in some instances provide some more support on how you work with the media or what a field program is. Some of them really want to be involved in the day-to-day and the budget, and others are don't. You know, they're more interested in the policy and the people. So you have to figure out who the candidate is and tailor your support to them.
Of course, like any person that you're working with or mm-hmm. any friend either, yeah. if you want to take it out of the professional lens. Other than the roles that you explained to me, are there any roles that you've worked in campaign teams, and what tasks did they consist of?
I have been the communications director, the digital director, the body man, the driver, the fundraiser, the person who works the door at an event. I've had a staff of 20, and I've been a staff of one. So I've done it all at different levels, definitely. I definitely have more experience in the communications and the digital and the creative realm. I haven't ever run a field program, but I have worked closely with the field program in support of what they need to do that and understand that. One of the things that I think is really interesting that a lot of people don't know about is something called Vote Builder. I don't know if you're familiar with Vote Builder.
No, I'm not.
The party here maintains it, and it has access to all of the voters in the state. And you can log in and say, I want to target... a particular demographic, like a 18 to 35 year old women in a particular zip code, and I want to make sure they get this message, or I want to make sure we knock their doors. So you can mm-hmm. pull those people and target specifically to them, and the field program utilizes those things often. And so the way the comms team might support them is you would write a mailer that is specific to that audience, or a walk piece that is specific to that audience that the field team that would then utilize. And that's a nice way, you know, you don't have to blanket everywhere. You can look at people who frequently vote, which is nice because you can look at likely voters versus people, you know, who are just not politically involved. And that has made it easier for campaigns, especially on the smaller size, to be more effective.
Well, especially you're not going to want to say the same things to somebody who is an avid voter
right.
Than to somebody who doesn't vote at all. You're going to have a different way of approaching that.
Right. Yeah. That message might be more what we call GOTV, which is get out the vote, as opposed to a persuasive message.
Right. That makes sense. We'll now be able to hear the purpose of an addition of a consultant team to an election, as well as the differences between a much bigger federal campaign team compared to a local campaign team. What is a consulting team's role in a campaign versus other staff members? Also, what makes the experience different from a federal campaign as well? We can divide those into two different questions, because yeah. I'm very curious about both.
Yeah. As far as a consultant staff is concerned, they're more expensive. They have more skills. So you would consider a consultant team when you need to expand your skill set. And maybe it's not, you know, I don't need to pay this person every day, but I really need their input or their skill for a particular amount of time. Mm-hmm. So on a big federal campaign, you would have a huge consultant team. You'd have a pollster. You'd have a media consultant. You'd have a digital firm. You would have a national fundraising consultant. You'd have a mail consultant. Mail, M-A-I-L, but they are often M-A-L-E. And this consultant team meets once a week. When it gets closer to crunch time, it can be once a day. It can be multiple times a day. And they're really the brain trust of what is driving everything else. And then the staff, some level of the staff will interact with that consultant team, but often they're executing what has been decided at that level. Maybe let's look at a state rep race. That's an instance where you'd still consider consultants. You'd probably do some polling. You may look at a different approach to polling, like a digital poll that's a little more expensive instead of like a pollster. Polls can range. If you have a pollster, it could be a $50K for a poll. And if you do a digital poll, you could be looking at somewhere like $2K to $8K. So it makes it a little more affordable. And then if you're going to do TV, you'd want to bring in a media consultant, and they'll write your scripts, they'll shoot your ad, they'll cut it, and they'll place it, they'll do the media buy for it.
right now, we're not just buying on TV. We're doing this thing called OTT, which is streaming. And a lot of campaigns are putting more money into streaming ads and then digital ads. And then you'll mimic your digital ad to your TV ad. But your media consultant would advise you there, but they would come in, they'd meet with a candidate, they'd come in and they'd do the ad and then they would leave. And they may be available here and there as needed, but they wouldn't be part of the day-to-day team. And then if you're looking at maybe more of a local race, you're most likely not going to have a consultant team. You may have someone you consider a consultant who's local or in state, so you can tap into their skills, but you're not having to pay them a daily rate.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So kind of like a contract situation. I can see why they get so pricey. And you even said like a lot of local campaigns don't have consulting teams.
Yeah.
But oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I can see why it starts going up.
Yeah. Yeah. That you often do need at least one paid staffer for a local race. And there are different levels of local races too. A mayor's race versus a magistrate's race is very different. And a mayor's race I would consider at the level of a state campaign, the budget is definitely higher. You're definitely working with consultants in that instance.
Definitely. It makes sense that would be such a great difference, right? Mm-hmm. You want to get it out to more people if it's a bigger race. You have more voters, more potential voters at least. Courtney will now walk us through some of the ways campaigning has changed. She'll be talking a lot about the different ways to reach out to people in the community to fundraise for local elections, including hosting events and making calls based off of their own KREF research. I'm sure you've been able to maybe witness a few of the changes in the way that elections function over the years, from analog to digital. Through that shift, what has changed in the way campaigns fundraise and then the eventing element of campaigns? What, if anything, has stayed the same as well?
So let's look at what has changed. I've done this for a little while, but there are people who have done this a lot longer than I have, who I've learned from and work with. And I think we're all learning together and learning from each other. There are the traditional personal touches that are important for us, you know, young staffers not to forget about. The door knocking, the candidate interactions, radio. Radio still plays an important role. And it's something that I think younger people who are working in this field can overlook. Traditionally, you would put a majority of your money on TV, if that was what you were going to do. And I think that people are starting to see that there are other places to make that spin, like we talked about streaming and digital, and the importance of digital, and an email program, and how that all funnels into your email program, just seeing how everything works together. So, you know, you don't want to overlook what has worked and is working, but you also want to make sure you're playing in these other spaces. And I think that, you know, a lot of other things have changed through the coronavirus. Campaigns were going on during that. People do a lot of door knocking. We had to figure out how we get around that. So we've incorporated Zoom and Zoom meetings, which is kind of different. Digital town halls are more of a thing now. So it's not just how you reach out via fundraising, but it's also how do you do voter contact, I think, now. Which has been interesting to see happen so quickly. So call time is one of the most effective ways to fundraise. So what you do, you'll have a fundraiser person. If you're a staff of one, that person will do it. But typically you have a specific, you know, fundraising person dedicated to this, and they do what we call donor research. Every person who donates is online. You can find that on KREF, and it says who they are, who they've donated to in the past, and how much. So if we wanted to look at, let's just say, Rep. Brace in Lexington, and they're a Democrat, then you may go look at who gave to Andy or Steve Beshear previously in Lexington. If it was a Republican, you would want to go back to the Republican donors. And you do that donor research. You create what call sheets with it has a little bit of information with the about the person. You do some work getting numbers, and a candidate sits down and just calls and calls and calls and tells them, you know, I need you on this team. This is who I am. I'd appreciate your support. and it's tedious, and some candidates are really good at it, and some candidates hate it. And if they hate it, you have to figure out a way to make that up. But that is that's one of the traditional and effective ways to fundraise. You can also do solicitation letters. So if you don't have numbers for these donors, you will likely have addresses. So you'd write them a letter and tell them who you are, and tell them you appreciate their support, and you'd include that remit envelope that we talked about, and then they'll mail it in. It's another avenue to bring in money that's not digital.
Lastly, eventing. So would you kind of do the same? Just, I mean, before we had widespread, you know, digital communication, that would just be letters and cold calling, right? Or call time and knocking on doors.
Yeah. So, there are events. I guess there are several levels of events. It kind of goes along with call time. So if you have a donor who's kind of like a hub with lots of donors around them, they say to the candidate, hey, I think I have some people who might support you, but they're going to need to meet you. They're going to need to know where you stand on the issues. Mm-hmm. So why don't I have this event? You can come, they can come, and you can tell them about yourself and make the ask. So I think all of us have probably received invitations to some fundraising event or another at somebody's house. You know, Bill does a meet and greet or Bill does a fundraiser, and it's about an hour and a half. There's usually food, and the candidate talks. You get to ask the candidate questions, and on your way in and out the door, they try to collect your information, and they offer you a remit envelope. And those can be really effective. The reason those are effective is because it goes beyond your own personal Rolodex, and it taps the Rolodex of the host and of the people that they invite.
Also, it just goes back to like the importance of that face-to-face interaction. Mm-hmm. You can see an ad about a politician on TV, but what is that really going to tell you, right? But yeah. that campaigning element of just face-to-face interaction seems like we just keep coming back to that. Yeah. How important that is.
Yeah, I mean, you could have all the money in the world and not have a candidate who is authentic or who is meeting the time, and people aren't going to be motivated. But if you hit that right bio and that right candidate and that right time, people are going to be motivated. You have to be prepared for that and make sure that you are taking in those funds. You know, you have that donate button on the website. You are making those calls, and people will be motivated to give. And sometimes those things don't line up, and people struggle to fundraise.
Is there anything else that you'd like to tell folks about your experience and like your knowledge about working in campaigns and working on a staff team and closely with politicians?
Yeah, I think I would say that it feels exclusive when you're on the outside, but oftentimes people need skills, and they are more than happy to work with you and to hear from you. And it just takes getting your foot in the door. And there are often lots of opportunities for that. And I think beyond campaigns is just getting involved with your local party. They reorg every so years. You can be a part of the executive board. You can be involved with your statewide party. And I think that if you're frustrated with the direction of your political party, the best thing to do is to get involved and to work with candidates, because it really does make a difference, especially in a state like Kentucky. There's not a huge pool of people who are inclined to get involved.
And would you say, like, in general, I know that, you know, we're not talking about exactly who you work for, but would you say the candidates that you work for are generally pretty accessible to people that live in their area?
I think it's different on different levels, depending on how much of an area they represent.
Right.
But yes, particularly local and state, state rep candidates, local candidates, yes.
Y'all, it just goes back to your elected representatives are always accessible. You definitely should not feel afraid of having conversations with them and also getting involved. Thank you so much, Courtney. I appreciate you talking with me and walking us through everything. Yeah, we appreciate you.
It was great. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. That's all for the second episode of the Civic Lex podcast, LexVote 2022 edition. Please email us at info@civiclex.org to tell us you're listening or give us any feedback you might have. Tell your friends and get ready to vote.